Blog Talk Radio.
My lovely, lovely people. How's everybody doing today? I got a lot for you. First things first, I have my authoritarian streak has taken over, and I have overridden the will of the people. What does that mean? It means so a few nights ago, I tweeted out a picture of two random brick walls. Yeah, I love how, first of all, everybody in my that follows me on Twitter is super creative because they immediately, like, tried to connect dots. They were like, is this a choice of this election? Like, one brick wall versus another brick wall. Get it? Like, they're fucking stupid steel trap mines. Anyway, so I asked people, I did a poll, which one is better, first one or the second one? Obviously, I'm asking this because we're in the middle of building our new studio. And people overwhelmingly picked option number two. I think it was 62% or something like that. And I took a look at both of them and how it would look on camera. I have overridden the will of the people. I did it. You can't fucking stop me, man. I'm making the decision. Fuck off. Yeah, so they wanted the more, I guess, modern brick wall that was a little more too busy. But I went with the traditional white brick. I love how I just started the show with this random story because it was the first thing on my mind, even though it's not connected at all to what we're doing today. But anyway, it's coming along, man. It's coming along. The studio's coming along. There's no show tomorrow. I got some stuff that I'm going to do in that respect. It's taken longer than I thought, which is kind of frustrating, but it is coming along. I honestly thought I'd already be in the new studio at this point, but I don't know. It's a son of a bitch. There's always problems. You never know. You blink and eight new problems pop up when you're renovating something. But coming soon. We'll do a fundraiser at some point too. I'm getting excited over it. You know, when the design decisions were starting to roll in, it's like, oh, okay. All right, I like this. I like this a lot. So I can't wait until it's finally ready and we can have a better backdrop than what we're working with right now. I mean, I love when people rip on it. I love it because it's fucking hilarious. Like, well, what's going on, man? What are you, in a massage parlor? What's happening? You're going to get a happy ending at the end of the show? I don't get it. What is that? Yeah, that's kind of that's a fair thing to say. We got the room divider that's always been there. Anyway, what do you have to look forward to today? Well, I got a study on just how pathetic the media is. I'll have some fun with that. I'm like a cat with a toy when I discuss how shitty the media is. Virtually the entire scientific community said, fuck Donald Trump. That's powerful. That is powerful. I feel like that's a super important story. And then also, Hillary Clinton is continuing to pander to the right. Wait until you hear the new group that Hillary Clinton and her cohorts created. You're going to want to vomit. Okay, so let's get started, and we're going to do that with the story on the media so you know just how disastrous this election cycle has been in more ways than one. There's a new Harvard study out that found the media is doing a pretty horrific job this election cycle. So they looked into ABC, CBS, CNN, Fox, and NBC, among others, and they found that, quote, policy issues are nearly absent in the coverage. So think about that, because most Americans, like you guys, might get your news, you know, from new media outlets like myself. You might get it from respected and important publications online that do actual investigative journalism. You might get it from print because a lot of you guys are policy wonks, so you actually, you know, might dig into the details in a really long story. There are a lot of people in the country who don't do that, and it's not their fault necessarily because they don't have the time to do it. You got kids, you got to go grocery shopping, you got to do this, you got to do that. So what happens? Well, at the end of the night, I don't know, turn on CNN for 30 minutes, turn on the nightly news and see what's going on, and this is how they get their news, if they get any news at all. So when people do that, the massive downside is policy issues are, quote, I'll say it again, nearly absent from the coverage of the election. So how can that possibly be? Well, the answer is actually very simple. They view the election and they discuss the election solely from the horse race aspect of it. Now, don't get me wrong, like this idea of not covering the horse race would be bad, but I think you have to cover the horse race angle, and as you cover the horse race angle, you should pepper your coverage with endless policy discussion. Honestly, that's what I try to do. Because in all seriousness, I've learned this in my time, you know, doing this show. If you just post a segment that says, like, in-depth analysis of marginal tax rates, nobody's going to fucking click on that. Nobody's going to click on that. So what you have to do is you have to frame it in a way that, you know, catches people's attention. Trump nearly shows his dick or something. I have a title like that, and it could be true, right? And then in that segment, you go on to talk about, well, okay, here's the angle that people are interested in, and then you can link it into a broader conversation. Here's where Hillary Clinton stands on health care. Here's where Donald Trump stands on health care. Here are their tax plans. Here's this. Here's that. And you can get into the details of it. What they're saying is, what this study found is, in the mainstream media, there is no let me hook you in and give you policy details. There is no policy focus, period. They're just flailing in the wind. Everything is viewed through the horse race angle. So everything is, he said this, she said this, oh my God, he used a naughty word. Oh my God, Benghazi, Benghazi, Benghazi. You know, it just goes on and on with faux scandals and some genuine scandals, and covering everything like it's a reality show. And that's not, I mean, that really does a disservice to the institution of journalism. That's journalistic malpractice to do that, because then you're going to have a really dumbed down citizenry. It's no surprise Donald Trump, who's the king of this soundbite media culture, who's got the one-liners that are zingers, it's no surprise this guy's doing so well when, you know, he's the kind of personality that is electric enough to get people to, oh, well, let me see what's going on with this guy. Let me see what's up with him. So it's almost a perfect case and a clear case of style over substance and reality show culture over, you know, caring about policy specifics and details. Now, I'm optimistic enough to think that, and I think my show proves it, that, you know, can give people the policy substance, and they actually like that. A lot of people really like that, and there's a thirst for it. There's a hunger for it. Oh, my God, I want the policy substance. But it's just got to be done in the right way. It's got to be done artfully, and it's got to be done in a way that has some innate appeal. Like I said, you can't just say an in-depth analysis of marginal tax rates. People go, yawn, move on to the next thing. But they're not even flirting with that idea in the mainstream media, and this proves it more. So when you dig deeper and you look at the different biases that the establishment media has, I mean, we've discussed it a million times. So when you talk about Fox News, what bias do they have? It's obvious. The Republican Party bias. By the way, that's not even the same as a conservative bias. Conservatism is an ideology. And if you have an outlet that's conservative, a media outlet, that's actually a good thing. You want outlets that represent different ideologies. But Fox News, it's not that. They represent the Republican Party. So they're party loyalist hacks. And that's their problem. They have a Republican bias. MSNBC, on the other hand, they have a Democratic Party bias. Not a liberal bias, not a progressive bias. They have a Democratic Party bias. So lo and behold, wherever the Democrats end up falling on an issue, oh, they were for TPP? I guess MSNBC is for TPP when they're for it. Oh, now they're pretending to be against it? Oh, MSNBC is going to pretend to be against it. And this is how it works. Now, those are the fringe examples. The overwhelming majority of the outlets have what's called a neutrality bias. And everybody knows how that functions. The idea is you never give actual facts, and you're never objective in your coverage. So you can never just say Republicans are wrong, Democrats are right on this, or none of you are right, here's the right answer. You always have to play he said, she said. Okay, Democrats say one thing, Republicans say the other thing, and now let's move on to the next segment. I don't want to give you an answer because I don't want to offend anybody. I don't want to defend half my audience. So let me just, you know, be as vacuous and vapid as possible, and then let's move along. And probably another really important bias here is the sensationalism bias, which might be the key problem that this Harvard study uncovered, which is you're much more likely to focus on shit that will just – it's like the quick fix, you know? It's like if you're super tired and instead of going to sleep and fixing the problem, you take a shot of Monster Energy. So they – oh, my God, if our ratings are struggling, what do you do? I don't know. Breaking news. Say something about Kim and Kanye West. Like, the sensationalism bias is just – a sheer attempt to beef up ratings in a way that's not genuine and pure and in journalism's best interest. So the sensationalism bias would be a faux scandal involving Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton that has nothing to do with substance. You know, it would be talking about celebrities and sprinkling that in amidst 3 minutes coverage on Syria if they cover it at all. So there's so many problems with the media, and hopefully that's where new media comes in, and that's where we fill the void, and that's where we – I mean, the saddest thing is, it's not insane to say this, do the actual work where the mainstream media is not doing it. Now, I personally don't think print outlets are bad at all. In fact, I think they're fantastic. That's where we get all of the information for this show is you read various articles, you get all the data, and then you come out here and you share it and you discuss it. So print outlets are pretty much exempt from all of my criticisms on the media. But what this Harvard study shows, and by the way, they did look into some print outlets too, and they said even in those outlets, it's really not as good as you think. But definitely on TV, you have policy issues just not in the realm of discussion. Well, okay, I mean, thank you for leaving the door open to do the kind of discussion that many people in the country rightly crave. Okay. All right, now we're going to talk a little bit about the scientific community and who they favor for president. Virtually the entire scientific community came out against Donald Trump in a letter. So Chris D'Angelo explains for us here. Hundreds of the world's leading scientists, including famed physicist Stephen Hawking, warned in an open letter Tuesday that a Donald Trump win in November would prove disastrous to global efforts against climate change. The Republican presidential nominee, who claimed global warming is a hoax created by and for the Chinese, vowed in May that he would cancel the historic Paris Climate Agreement. Opting out of that pact, write the 375 members of the U.S. National Academy of Sciences, including 30 Nobel Prize winners, would have severe and long-lasting consequences both for the planet and for the United States' credibility. Now, they go on in their letter to list all the things that go hand-in-hand with climate change. This is something that is largely overlooked. Like, when we talk about climate change, it's just we just kind of mention climate change and expect that our audience is educated enough to understand the downsides of it. But they wrote the letter kind of letting everybody know, well, let me fill you in. Like, let me tell you exactly what's going to happen if we continue going down this path. And you're talking about ocean acidification. You're talking about rising sea levels. You're talking about a decrease in freshwater supply and literal wars over water in third world countries when places start to run out of water. You're talking about increase in the cost of food that goes through the roof. I mean, you're talking about lost output of trillions of dollars. You're talking about an increase in natural disasters and droughts and wildfires. I mean, the consequences are just comprehension. Like, people think, oh, yeah, whatever, it just gets a little warmer or something. Yeah. No. Look at what the data says. Look at what the evidence says. Look at what the scientists are warning. This is nothing to be taken lightly. I mean, Bernie Sanders said it all in the primary when he came out and argued that we need to treat climate change like a World War II level threat. Now you think, whoa, we're talking about Nazis here. Fucking Nazis. Genocidal maniacs. Really? That's how you're going to treat climate change? Yes! A lot of scientists look at that, they go, yes! Because even if you're a rich person, as many other commentators have pointed out, you can't buy a place with better air. Like, this affects everybody. This affects all of humanity. And basically, as of right now, we're going 70 miles an hour towards a brick wall. And the plans that we have that go the furthest decrease our speed to 30 miles an hour. Like, we're still going to crash into the wall, but now we're going 30 instead of 70. So it's like we got to do something, and we got to do it now. The Paris Agreement is just a little step in the right direction, but we got to go further. And what they're saying is Donald Trump is on fucking Neptune when it comes to issues like this. He doesn't know anything. His head is directly in his rectum. That's where it is. In fact, let me give you some more here. They say, quote, Trump's senior economic advisor, Stephen Moore, said that lifting all restrictions on mining, fracking, and drilling is among the ways the GOP candidate plans to pay for his costly proposals. What? Eliminate all restrictions on mining, fracking, and drilling. Are you kidding me? That moves us in the wrong direction on a level, again, that's nearly impossible to comprehend. As bad as Hillary Clinton is, everybody who listens to this show knows I despise Hillary Clinton. As bad as she is, the chances of her removing all restrictions on these things, 0%. She's not going to do it, but it gets worse for Trump. Trump wants to eliminate not only the FDA, which we spoke about in detail recently.
Let's get rid of the FDA food police.
What? So, okay, another salmonella outbreak, E. coli outbreak.
What am I going to do? I had to get rid of the regulators. Red tape, too much red tape. Believe me, tremendous. Let me just tell you.
That's stupid. Okay, but it's not just the FDA. What else do you want to get rid of? Guess. Go ahead. The EPA. You want to get rid of the Environmental Protection Agency? Like, guys, understand, it's a stupid enough position to look at the EPA and say, with them specifically, we want to deregulate. Because what they do is super important, and they don't go nearly far enough in what they do. Because obviously we have a corrupt system, and their hands are tied, and they can't really regulate everything as efficiently as they'd like to. So just saying, let me deregulate that, is stupid enough. When you say, I want to eliminate the EPA, you're just saying, I want the United States to look like China. I want there to be smog fucking everywhere. I want there to be pollution everywhere. I want it to be carcinogenic levels. We now know that pollution causes cancer. I want you to have to wear those fucking masks everywhere you go. I want to live in a cesspool with dirty air, and I want it to be disgusting 24/7. This legendary moron says eliminate the EPA. And again, this is the guy who argues, I'm going to pull out of the Paris Agreement on day one. So all other issues aside, and by the way, the scientists don't even bring them up. They don't touch it because you know what scientists do? They only talk about shit that they know about for sure. This is something they know about for sure. None of them said, hey, also, by the way, she's better on the minimum wage. And, you know, under her, the debate is, are you going to raise it to 12 or are you going to raise it to 15? Under him, he said, I'm going to lower wages. None of them bring up the global economy where he says, I'm the king of debt. If something happens, I'll just make a deal and it'll be tremendous. In other words, default on U.S. debt, which is an insane idea, because then you have a global depression. As bad as Hillary is, she would never do that. They don't bring that up. They don't bring up, hey, the Supreme Court, this jackass wants the next Antonin Scalia on the court, who thinks the devil is real, is openly racist and said blacks belong in slower track schools, and is pro-torture. This is who he wants, the next one of those guys on the court. They don't say, hey, look, Hillary's better on that. They don't go into any of the other issues where she is clearly better despite how corrupt she is. All they say is, on this alone, game, set, match, bitch. So, you know, look, I know, and I'm part of the crowd. I'm part of the crowd that is absolutely disgusted with Hillary Clinton. I am. Far too corrupt, far too right-wing, far too interventionist. I mean, it's far too close to Wall Street. The list goes on and on. Even Stephen Hawking, arguably, if not just outright, the smartest person on the planet, looks at the choices and goes, that's cute. Where's the debate? So it's pretty important here when 375 of the world's smartest people, the top scientists on the planet, say, what are you talking about? There's one goal here. Keep that guy out of office. It's not me saying it. I didn't say it. They're saying it, and I'm presenting it to you. Do with it what you will. Okay. Now we go to Politico and go after Hillary Clinton's bad debate strategy. Politico has an article on how Democrats are coaching Hillary Clinton to debate Donald Trump. Let's break it down here. They explain, he's going to say cockamamie stuff, said Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee Chairman John Tester. Give him the rope. Indeed, the best strategy for Clinton, lawmakers advised, is to let Trump do most of the talking. Quote, inevitably, he's going to say enough dumb things to dominate the headlines, said Senator Chris Murphy. He's going to make mistakes. The question is, how big are the mistakes? And I'm certain there are things she can do that would cause his mistakes to be bigger. Clinton will have to parry when Trump comes directly at her, but a more restrained rope-a-dope strategy is preferable to an aggressive posture right out the gate, Democratic senators said. Is this a good strategy? Is this a bad strategy? Why not? It's a terrible strategy. So let me get this straight. Your goal is to shut up as much as possible and let him run his mouth? Okay, I don't know if you noticed, Donald Trump is decent at one thing, and that's hammering your ass. So you got crooked Hillary, ties to Wall Street, the Iraq War, support of the Iraq War, horrible, terrible. You know, let me tell you, I'm going to fix it. I'm going to make it so that we're no TPP. That's what's going to happen. She pushed for TPP. I'm against TPP. I'm for the American worker. She says I'm with her. I say I'm with you, the American people. Crooked Hillary. Let me just tell you, believe me, crooked. So you're going to let this guy go out there and frame the discussion and frame the debate and go to work. Okay, why would that be a good idea? Well, he's Trump. He's Trump, and Trump is Trump, so he's going to flame out. Yeah, that's the same argument that idiots made during the primary. Trump is going to flame out because he's Trump. What happened? He ran roughshod over Marco Rubio, roughshod over Ted Cruz. Jeb Bush, three debates in, Jeb Bush would be on the stage, and people would be like, who's Jeb Bush? Is that a person? What's going on here? Is there somebody named Jeb running for president? Even, you know, anybody would look at him and go, even if they liked Jeb before, they're like, he's a bitch. I'm not voting for that guy. So, like, this idea of this, like, naive assumption of, well, it's Trump, so come on. It's Trump. He can't win. He's Trump. That's what's been wrong every step of the way. And now you're going to give him a platform where he can run his mouth all day long about how terrible you are. Guys, you don't get it. Like, it's possible for him to win solely bashing Hillary Clinton. It could be all he does is talk about how corrupt she is, and he can win based off that because people are sick of the fucking corruption. So, and Hillary's, the idea, and they go on to say this in the article, well, if she just appears presidential, that'll fix it. Look at how Obama beat Romney, you jackasses. Obama actually went to work on Romney. I mean, he fucking went after him. He was super aggressive and ran as a fucking big-time progressive. Now, unfortunately, when he's in office, he doesn't govern that way. He's, you know, a centrist. But he pretended like, oh, yeah, I'm basically damn near Bernie Sanders, and let me tell you how horrible this guy is, and let me explain why he's wrong and why he's bad, and attack, 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 and Romney got owned. But Hillary's strategy is the opposite. Now, you don't want to alienate anybody, so you don't actually want to talk about policy and be specific and detailed about how you're going to help the American people, because you might piss off either right-wingers or left-wingers who you want to vote for you. So just shut up and look presidential, and that'll work. They keep assuming that Hillary Clinton's got this, like, you know, this view in the public as an esteemed public servant, an insider. That's not how they view you. You're fucking tied with Donald Trump and unfavorables. What don't you get about that? You're at 56%. He's at 56%, according to a recent poll. So they already know, like, oh, there's a lot of things I don't like about her. She's been too much of an insider. She's been too corrupt, too close to Wall Street, this and that. And you're going to let Trump go out there and continue to solidify that and put that in concrete and let everybody know, yes, that's true, and she's the problem, and you're not even going to respond. You're not going to do it in a way that's aggressive, and you point out the problems with him. Understand something, guys. Everybody knows how harsh of a critic I am of Hillary Clinton. What did I say after her convention speech, though? I said it started out super weak because, vague platitude, you know, cliche platitude. We're stronger together. Break down the barriers. I'm with her. Just stupid, vacuous, vapid nonsense. So I hated the first part of the speech. By the end of the speech, what did I say? She came back strong. Now, why was that? Because in the part of the speech where she went after Donald Trump, virtually everything she said was true. She made an argument, and she connected the dots for you. She said, this guy's going to say he's for the American worker. This guy's going to say he wants to keep jobs in America. Why does he outsource his own jobs to Turkey and Mexico and China? You know, arguments like that, you hear that, you go, oh, that's just accurate. You forget the source. You forget, oh, it's Hillary Clinton telling me this because what she's saying is actually true, so you just nod along in agreement. Yep, that's right. Douche he is. And it just can go on and on. And you go, yep, that's true, that's true. It's something like, are you going to trust a guy who gets into Twitter fights at 3 a.m. with the nuclear codes? I'm like, yeah, no, I don't. I get into Twitter fights at 3 a.m. I'm a prick, so I shouldn't have the nuclear codes. Obviously, Donald Trump shouldn't have the nuclear codes. Arguments like that, I go, yep. Your goal should be to be as aggressive as possible and to get people to agree with all your offensive attacks. But that's what you got to do, but they're not planning on doing that. They're planning on doing the opposite. Lay back, do rope-a-dope. No, but that – you're not Muhammad Ali. You're just not, and it ain't going to work. So you need to do a blitzkrieg offensive in your own respect, and you need to hammer him. And the arguments you need to make are basically by pointing out various things about him and about how disqualifying he is, his policy and otherwise, the argument you're supposed to make to the American people is, this isn't a choice. This isn't a choice. You could like me, or honestly, you can hate me. You can fucking despise me. Still going to rather have me in office than him. That's what it comes down to. Why? For all the reasons you state. He says he wants to pull out of the Geneva Conventions. What? He says, I'm going to bring back torture. I want to torture. I'm going to torture, quote, even if it doesn't work. I'm going to kill civilians and take out their families. We have to take out their families. And that's going to be the point, is to kill civilians. Go ahead, vote for terrorist Donald Trump. You can't do it. You won't do it because you're not that crazy. You're not that stupid. Even if you don't like me, I'm better than this idiot who doesn't believe in climate change and who wants to put the next Antonin Scalia on the Supreme Court. You don't have a choice. He's a moron. He's a lunatic. You're going to want me in office, period. These are the arguments you make. Instead, you know, they're going to... Attack me all you want, Don, or don't I look so presidential? No, you don't look presidential right now. You have a black eye and you're laying in a pool of your own blood. That's what he's going to do to you if you don't know how to go on the offense. Okay. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I have another example of Hillary Clinton running to the right. Oh, God, don't do it. She did it. She fucking did it. And then we have Bill Clinton on CNBC. Botching him being a surrogate for his wife. Stay right there. I hear you crying out.
son of a bitch. Are we back? Are we not back? What's happening? Oh, we're back. Guess who's back? Back again. All right. Next.
I have example number 8,765 here of Hillary Clinton pandering to the right and abandoning the left. So the Hill breaks this down for us. Clinton's campaign is launching a new group called Mormons for Hillary. Comes as Clinton hopes to gain ground on GOP nominee Donald Trump in Utah and get an edge in the battleground state of Nevada. The group consists of almost 120 members, including some longtime Republicans who believe Clinton is the best candidate to uphold religious freedom, according to the Salt Lake Tribune. Democrats feel emboldened this cycle that they can make a play for Utah, a state that hasn't gone Democratic in a presidential election in 52 years. Members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints make up 60% of Utah's population and about 5% of Nevada's. Though the church's population in Nevada is smaller, it could have an outsized impact in a close race. Trump leads Clinton by less than a percentage point in the state, according to an average of polls. Okay. The worst strategy imaginable. Why do you insist on continuing to shoot yourself in the foot? So what has she been doing recently? She joined Bush-era neocons on stage to give a speech to veterans and talk about how much we need a muscular foreign policy. She's cuddling up to neocons and making their arguments. She touted the endorsement of John Negroponte, a notorious neocon. Everybody knows her fawning adoration for Henry Kissinger, who is a war criminal. These are the people who she's going around with now, you know, and now Mormons for Hillary. See, Hillary, the reason why we get so mad at you is pandering to them is admitting I don't really care that much about liberal values. Now, she just said, well, what do you mean? I'm just trying to get votes. But how would everybody react if, for example, she launched an initiative, Fundamentalist Muslims for Hillary? Everybody would kind of get it, wouldn't they? Like, oh, wait, hold on. The values of fundamentalist Muslims are anathema to liberal values. It's the opposite of liberalism. But yeah, but I just want their votes. But how are you going to get their votes? Well, I got to say I agree with them and the things they do. Well, then think about what she's doing. You're abandoning your base, who are supposed to be the overwhelming majority of your supporters, to try to get a little extra 5% or 3% over here from people who are supposed to disagree with you ideologically. But that is exactly what she's been doing this entire general election. And this is why, guys, she's hemorrhaging millennial support. It's not just like me coming out here and bitching about it and I'm the only one who cares. No, if anything, I'm the one that's – I'm fucking Paul Revere saying, the fucking British are coming. I'm screaming at her. You're losing your base. You barely had them to begin with. But now you're continuing to slap across the face, spit in their eye. That's what you keep doing. And then you naively think, well, where are they going to go? They're just going to stay right there. They're going to stay home. They're going to vote Gary Johnson. They're going to vote Jill Stein. They're going to write in Bernie Sanders. Even some of them are going to vote for Donald Trump. Only 52% of Bernie's supporters in the primary are saying, you know what, I'll suck it up and vote for Hillary. Only 52%. She lost 17 points among millennials in the last month. Why? Because of this. You're doing it right now. You're doing it right now. Mormons for Hillary. That's tremendous. Okay, but take the next step then. Just say it. Republicans for Hillary.
I believe in a big tent party where the tent is so big that we allow in the opposing party and we try to implement the opposing party's philosophy.
Then what's the point of the Democrats anymore? Then there is no more point for the Democrats. But they don't get it. They don't fucking get it. They don't get it. You've pissed off your entire base. You're hemorrhaging millennial support. Independents now favor Donald Trump to Hillary Clinton. Why? Because of this. She's trying to be everybody. She's trying to be everybody and everything and represent every ideology. But that, by its very nature, Hillary, means you're a fucking liar. You can't represent everybody. You can't represent everything. You can't agree with fundamentalist Mormons and liberal secularists. That's not a thing. There is no middle path where those things can be reconciled because it doesn't – logically, it makes no sense. It makes no sense. It's like saying, you know what? I'm for gay marriage and against gay marriage at the same time. But you can't be. That doesn't exist. But this is the functional equivalent of what she's trying to do in the general election. We covered the story yesterday. There was a report on climate change that found that Hillary Clinton, all of a sudden she used to cover climate change in 50% of her speeches in the primary. Now it's down to 1/5. We can empirically measure your shitty right-wing pivot. The pivot is going to die, Hillary. It's an old model. It's not real anymore. It's not a thing anymore. The older generation likes the old-timey, you know, classic politician who follows the book. The millennial generation wants to rip up the book, piss on it, shit on it, and throw it in a fucking fire. That's how much we hate your fucking book. You've built lying into your strategy. When you say during the primary, I'm so goddamn progressive that I'm left of Bernie Sanders, and now look at me in the general election. No, I'm super moderate and centrist, and maybe even right-wing. People accuse me of being a centrist. Guilty, as she said at one point, to be fair, not during this election cycle. Okay, you're making your bed. I keep telling you, you're making your bed, you're going to sleep in it. You're making your bed, you're going to sleep in it. Did you know? Now, I've maintained for the longest time, everybody knows this. I said, okay, Hillary's a slight favorite. I had a big fucking fight with Nate Silver because Nate Silver, you know, was saying Hillary's chances were damn near 90%, 80%, 90% not that long ago. And I said, dude, that's just not correct. That's just not correct. You know, you could say Hillary's got a 55%, 60% chance, and this was at the time a while ago, but it ain't fucking 80 or 90%. It's just not. And you got to factor in a bunch of things. I feel like he couldn't quantify how they're running their campaigns in any effective, efficient way, and that's not his fault. It's just the nature of what he does. You can't quantify something like that. So when you have a lack of data, what did he do? He just ignored it and acted like their campaigns aren't a thing. And, you know, just, okay, only the snapshot in time and don't look at the trends and what they're continuing to do. I said, no, you got to look at how they're running their campaigns. When you factor that in, if there was a way to empirically measure that and quantify it, I guarantee you this race is closer than what it appears to be. Of course, I was proven correct over time. Because now, because Hillary Clinton's been running the shittiest strategy imaginable, because Donald Trump has been running a decent strategy, bar his one implosion month, well, now Nate Silver admits, you know what it was yesterday when I looked at 538? 56% chance Hillary wins. So pretty much what I was saying all along. So this is the problem, Hillary. This is where we're at. You keep assuming that the way to do things is the old textbook way, which is deception, which is I was left-wing, now I'm right-wing. But you're not even looking at the polls and what the people actually think. Because as I've shown for you guys a million times, Bernie Sanders' ideas were actually the most popular. So even people who describe themselves as conservative and even people who describe themselves as moderate and independents, they love liberal ideas. They just don't know it. They don't know to label it liberal. But you ask them, yeah, Medicare for all is great. Yeah, let's raise taxes on the rich. Yeah, let's raise the minimum wage. You go down the list, there's fucking liberals. So you run right to get phantom right-wing moderates who are never going to fucking vote for you, ever, ever. And you abandon your entire base, and you abandon the left-leaning independents who you had a shot at, and you abandon millennials. I warned you. You have to switch course now. Iceberg dead ahead. You have to switch course now. Stop this. Stop running right. Stop taking Wall Street money. Just, if you don't do it, they're going to look back. I can't believe it. Donald Trump fucking won. It can happen. The race is damn near tied right now. Another poll came out this morning. Trump is up by 5 points nationwide in one poll. He's winning in Ohio and Florida. Enough, Hillary. You want to get serious about this or not? Mormons for Hillary. All right, let's go to Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton went on CNBC stumping for Hillary, and it didn't go very well. Let's see if his ideas over the years have become more liberal or more conservative.
What do you think about TPP? Because a lot of people look at that as the legacy for NAFTA.
Well, first of all, I don't think it has anything to do with NAFTA, but I think that the geopolitical reasons for it, from America's point of view, are pretty clear that it's designed to make sure that the future of the Asia-Pacific region economically is not totally dominated by China. I think it's pretty clear what Hillary said about it, and that is that there needs to be provisions on currency manipulation that are enforced, and there need to be, again, measures put in place in America so that we take care of whatever dislocation ever happens simultaneously. Everybody makes nice about doing something about it, and then at least for the last 20 years, for most of the time, Congress never wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And you just can't do that. It's not true. In places, especially where there's physical isolation, the market economy will not make up the difference unless there is a real investment or a real investment incentive or both.
What's the right corporate tax rate to make sure that you're bringing in income but also incentivizing businesses to be investing here in America? Is it 15%? Is it 35%? Is it somewhere in between?
I was the president who urged it to be raised to 35%. But when I did it, it was precisely in the middle of the OECD countries. It isn't anymore. So I think it should be lowered. This is just me now. I'm not speaking for you. I think it should be lowered, and we should do sort of what the Japanese did. We should try to get it as close to the international average as we can so we'll be competitive. But we ought to have an alternative minimum so everybody plays something that's acceptable, and you don't have to worry about finding every last tax shelter and every last dodge and every last this and the other thing. Just say, do that. And then I would like to see a repatriation initiative that works a little bit different than it did when President Bush signed one. This is one, actually, where he's probably has a more liberal position than I do.
Oh, boy. Where to begin with this one? So when he talks about repatriation, what that means is very simply all these corporations that have stashed their money in offshore tax havens. Repatriation means, they bring that money back in. But what he's saying is, look, you got to make a deal. And on this, I think that President Bush is actually more liberal than me. Oh, God. So he's saying, look, my idea, and he goes on to elaborate on this too, by the way, is, you have them bring the money back if a certain percentage, whatever that percentage is, goes towards like a national infrastructure bank. And then that goes towards rebuilding infrastructure, obviously. Now, what's the problem with that reasoning? Well, the problem is they just fucking said, I'm not gonna pay my taxes. And they're basically, it's like ransom, basically. So they're like, okay, we're going to take all of our billions of dollars and ship it overseas. And I'm not going to pay any taxes unless the government gives me a better deal. Imagine you tried to do that. You take your money and you say, that's nice. It's on the Cayman Islands now. I'm not paying any taxes. They would just fucking arrest you. That's what would happen. When a multinational corporation is like, oh, God, what are we going to do? I guess they have extra rights. It's not even that they're viewed as humans. It's worse than that. They have more rights than you do. So they just stash their money overseas, and they go, I'm not bringing it back until the government lets me keep most of it. So, the corporate tax rate, they say it's one of the highest in the modern world on paper, but that's just the nominal rate. The effective rate, which is what people actually pay, is one of the lowest in the modern world. It's between 12% and 15%. So, but they say, the corporations say, nope, that's not good enough. I want to keep it all. I want to keep it all. I want to keep it all. And under Bill Clinton's ideology here, he'd say, well, look, they'd probably almost keep it all. Maybe I'd make them pay a 2% tax, a 3% tax, maybe a 5% tax, and put that towards a national infrastructure bank, and then they get to keep the rest. So in other words, if you throw a temper tantrum long enough and you break the law long enough and hide your money overseas, well, then the government gives you a break if you're powerful enough. Again, you try to do that, your ass will be in jail. Corporations try to do that. They're cheating, you know, revenue from the government. They're not paying their taxes that everybody else would have to pay. They get to hide it, and then they get away with it, and then they get to cut a deal. So he's saying repatriation. Even George W. Bush is more liberal than me on that one. Then he says, look, I didn't put words in his mouth. He said it. I want to lower the corporate tax rate. Again, I just explained to you. On paper, it's one of the highest in the modern world. The effective rate is one of the lowest in the modern world. In other words, we have so many loopholes and deductions that you could say on paper I'm paying whatever percentage it is, but effectively I'm paying much less than that. He's like, I want it lowered. Okay, well, are you just going to call yourself a Republican now? What's going on here? And then when it gets to TPP, this is a super important part. He said, he admits, okay, no, here's what it's really about, competition with China. Yeah, this is what liberals and progressives have been saying all along, and this is one of the reasons why we're against it. Because it's not about the American worker. It's not about caring about the people. It's not about doing the right thing for them. It's not about making their lives better and increasing their quality of life. No, it's a competition with China. So in other words, China may drive down wages. It may ship out jobs. But bottom line is, it'll make our corporations more powerful than China. So, wonderful. Let's do it. And then the most important part, he says, well, look, I think Hillary's position is clear. And then he goes on to describe what. He doesn't say she's against it, and that's the end of the conversation, what am I going to do? No, what does he say? He says, well, you know, there's certain provisions on currency manipulation you got to tweak and blah, 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 blah. So in other words, she ain't against it. I told you this is what she's going to do. You know this is what she's going to do. She's going to get in there, and she's going to go, no, it's cool. I'm not for TPP. You see, we changed two provisions and tweaked them minorly, and now I'm in favor of it. So it's not the same TPP, it's a different TPP. So a completely new bill, you know, I'm for it. That's what's going to happen. I guarantee you that's what's going to happen. We know this is what's going to happen. This is why she pushed for it 45 times before. It's not like she's actually against it now. She's against it because she feels like she has to be to get fucking elected. She has to say that to get elected. Terry McAuliffe, one of the Clintons' closest friends, admitted at the DNC, yeah, I think she's for it. You just got to change a few things. Exactly. That's what we've been saying. So this is why we don't trust you. This is why we don't trust the Clintons. They are the ultimate corporatist elite Democrats. And by the way, let me be clear about something. They don't view themselves as, oh, nefarious, mwahaha, I'm going to screw over the people. They don't view themselves like that. I don't doubt that Bill Clinton genuinely believes all the things that he's saying and like, oh, no, this is the best position and this is how we fix it. But their worldview is shaped by the circles they run in. Their worldview is shaped by the circles they run in. They only hang out with other rich, elite executives and business owners and, you know, people in that circle. So when you're with people in that circle, well, it is true that people in that circle come up to you and say, we got to do the TPP. Why? Because it helps them. It fucks over average Americans, but it helps them. So they think, well, look, what we can do is we can reconcile this. We can make it so that we think maybe it helps the average worker, but it definitely helps our rich buddies. And we're the middle ground, you know, centrist triangulation Democrats here who are above the fray and so reasonable that we're with Democrats and Republicans on different issues. They think they're just the smartest people in the room and they're the brightest and they're looking out for people the most. And they don't even understand how negative of an effect it is to run only in those circles and to take corporate money and to be an elitist. They don't get it. So I think they mean well, but at the end of the day, their positions are detrimental to the well-being of most Americans, and this is why people don't trust Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton. They're right not to trust them. Okay. All right, let me do a quick story, then we'll take our final break. Donald Trump has a stable of religious lunatics backing him. They're going to get together and put their hands on him to ward off satanic attacks.
Years ago, the first interview of the president was a great preacher that almost said his name, but he was nationally known. And he said something, you know, I don't know if you remember. He said,
Yeah, I have a lot to say about this. First of all, I didn't know Lloyd Banks was Obama's. I didn't know Lloyd Banks was Donald Trump's pastor. That guy at the beginning, I was like, that's Lloyd Banks. That's who that is. I wonder what percentage of my audience actually even knows who the fuck Lloyd Banks is. But he even sounded like him, too. I was thinking, we on fire up in here. Ward off those satanic attacks. We on fire. I was just waiting for him to drop it. Okay. It's 2016. What is that? Why do we just casually accept stuff like this from people who are running for president? They're running to be the most powerful person on the planet. And this is just another thing that we allow. Like, it just is, what? Oh, yeah, what are you going to do? They all got together and warded off satanic attacks. Really? This is what satanic does first? This is what satanic, this is what Satan does? So, think about that. Satan is Satan, right? Satan, oh, he can do, mwahaha, I can do anything. I can kill people in a split second.
I'm at war with God. I'm powerful. I have control. Mwahaha.
So if Satan was really a thing, and he really disliked Donald Trump, he could just kill Donald Trump. Doesn't say, boop, dead. But no, the power of prayer from these puny humans.
We must cast away the demons and the satanic spells on Donald Trump.
That alone makes it so that this all-powerful evil being is like,
God darn it, you said the right words, and now my demon spells cannot pierce through your prayer shield.
This is shit people believe? Like, real? This is what's happening? People think, oh, Satan is going after Donald Trump, but he's protected. How can anybody believe that? How can anybody believe that? We have science nowadays. The year is not 32. I mean, and then the fucking hands on him. What is that? What? Okay, that's the modern equivalent of doing a rain dance around a fire. That's what that is. Like, if we imagine if that happened tomorrow. We're watching Hillary Clinton campaign, and in the middle of her speech, she decides, all right, now everybody let's go outside and have our customary rain dance to ward off the evil spirits. Everybody would be like, what the fuck is she talking about? I think it's worse than pneumonia. What's happening with her mind here? Hello? And they just start doing a fucking rain dance, and they play music. Somebody's playing the bongos and shit. Everybody would be like, this is the craziest thing I've ever fucking seen in my life. You're doing voodoo nonsense, and you want to be the most powerful person on the planet? This shows you're not rational. What are you talking about? But for whatever reason, you know, you do the modern equivalent of it, which is, oh, we don't dance around a fire and call for rain. We put our hands on them and say, oh, Satan, keep your hands off Donald Trump. He's so special. He's so great. And then everybody makes the God face. Is so creepy, isn't it? Where people make a face like, yes, I'm connecting with something even though I'm not. Make these weird faces and show the spirit is within me. The spirit is within me. No, no, the spirit's not within you. The crazy is within you. The crazy is within you. So I don't know why we accept this. We shouldn't accept this. People should talk about this. Like, this isn't acceptable in the modern era. This is like silly myths that were kabuki theater about spirits and demons and devils. I mean, if Donald Trump had somebody who literally believes in the Greek gods or the Roman gods go up there and, you know, say, with the power of Zeus vested in me, I'm going to protect you. Everybody go, that's a crazy person. But when it's the religion that's to the majority people, we go, yeah, well, I don't know, Jesus, something. The hippie bachelor guy, the magician bachelor Jesus, he's protecting him, I guess. People act like it's normal. It's not normal. This is not normal. So, I don't know. I just wish we were more logical about stuff. But, again, I do find it interesting that Lloyd Banks apparently is Donald Trump's pastor. All right, quick break. When we come back, got a lot more to get to. Trump goes full authoritarian, talking about stop and frisk. We got another unarmed black man shot and killed. Actually, to be fair, in this case, we really don't know if he's unarmed. The initial report said he was unarmed. The cops are saying he is armed. I'm not sure if they've released any evidence of that yet, but there might be evidence that will be released a little later on, so withhold judgment on that part of it. But there's another shooting. And then later on, Saudi Arabia. Oh, don't get me started on that. But you're gonna. That's what you're gonna do. All right, stay right there, guys.
I am the girl you know can't look you in the eye.
remember, guys, no show tomorrow since the last 30 minutes or so that you have of me until Monday. If I'm not mistaken, I don't know for sure, but you guys can look it up on Google as I talk here, not to give you homework or anything. I think that the first debate is Monday. Oh, boy. We're going to have Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton. What is this world coming to? I feel like this is more like a WWE pay-per-view than a presidential election. That's what I feel. All right, so let's continue along here. We have Donald Trump going full authoritarian. Let me break it down. Trump is continuing to go full authoritarian as we move towards Election Day. Political reports here. Donald Trump on Wednesday called for the controversial stop-and-frisk policing practice to be instituted nationwide as a means of combating violent crime in America's inner cities. He said, quote, "I would do stop-and-frisk. I think you have to. We did it in New York. It worked incredibly well, and you have to be proactive, and, you know, you really help people sort of change their mind automatically. You understand, you have to, in my opinion, I see what's going on here. I see what's going on in Chicago. I think stop and frisk in New York City, it was so incredible the way it worked. Now, we have had a very good mayor, but New York City was incredible the way that worked. So I think that could be one step you could do." Are you ready for the reality of the situation? That's, of course, complete and utter bullshit. Here's the reality. Quote, an independent study of the city's stop and frisk program found that 87% of the 685,724 stops for 2011, a record high, were of blacks and Latinos. Pause. Now, this is where some people who aren't that bright would step in and argue, oh, well, yeah, that's why you stop all them people, because they's the one committing the crimes. White power. Except, wait, do you know what stop and frisk is? They didn't see anybody committing a crime. They're just stopping people. So, I don't know, I saw something that maybe not suspicious. Do I need a reason to search you? No, stop and frisk. Fourth Amendment, Schmorth Amendment, I don't give a fuck. I'm going to search you. I don't know, you have the wrong skin tone. You're in the wrong neighborhood. No, I'm sure that could be their only evidence, even though it's not evidence. And they're like, okay, let's just use that, color of skin. Are they stopping and frisking Wall Street bankers who've robbed way more than any black or Latino person in the city? No. If you have a suit and tie and you're white, you could probably walk around with massive amounts of cocaine in your pocket. And they're like, hey, how you doing, sir? Beautiful morning, isn't it? So, okay, but again, people will argue, well, they're stopping them because they commit more of the crime. Wait for it. Young black men between the ages of 14 and 24 were stopped 106% of the time, as in, there were more stops of young black men than the entire population of young black men. Stop and frisk, here it is, had a 90% failure rate in 2011, and in the first 3 months of 2013, when the number of stops fell by 51% from the same period last year, the crime rate dropped as well. Key facts. Number one, 90% failure rate. You're 90% stopping innocent people and ignoring their constitutional Fourth Amendment rights. And also, when they didn't do stop and frisks, when they were cut in half, when stop and frisks were cut in half, the crime rate dropped as well. So do you understand that? It is not the case that the more stops and frisks you do, the less crime there is. It was the opposite. The fewer they did, the fewer crimes there were. There's no evidence it works, and it is wildly, wildly, insanely unconstitutional. If you care about rights at all, like if you're somebody, for example, who's really mad about the NSA situation and them taking all of our metadata and storing it and having the ability to spy on anybody for any fucking reason whatsoever, if you're mad about that, you have to be mad about this. You have to be mad about this. Because that is what it is. It's just, you know, hey, the cops, it's a fucking police state. The cops can just say, I want to fucking search you. I don't need a reason. Whatever I can come up with is reason enough, because I'm just going to stop and frisk you because you look guilty enough, so that's it. And if I happen to find something, and by the way, of the 90%
failure rate of the 10% that had something on them, what percentage of those were just dudes not hurting anybody, not bothering anybody, and they had a little bit of weed on them? Probably a lot of them, right? So, no, what you do with a policy like this is you legalize the cops being criminals. This is a criminal act on the part of the cops. That's what Donald Trump wants. Why? We've discussed it before. His ideology is, you know, I am the good guy no matter what I do. So if I want to pull out of the Geneva Conventions, do torture, ignore international law, kill civilians on purpose, I'm the good guy no matter what. No matter what I do, I'm the good guy. You know who else he lumps into that barrel? The cops. You know, the cops. Sure, maybe he would concede. Yeah, there's every now and then, very rarely, maybe there's one. I say, you went a little too far there. But if I set up a policy of permanent occupation and a police state and they get to search you for any reason whatsoever or non-reason and, you know, they tell you to do something, that's it. End of analysis. They are right. They are cops. They have the badges. That's as far as I go. And you have to obey. You have to obey. Doesn't matter what they do. You have to obey. That's a dangerous view of the world. That's a dangerous view of the world. It's deeply authoritarian because it's saying you can't question authority because the authority is right by its very nature. He's doing this. He proposed this policy in the middle of his minority outreach campaign. You can't make this shit up. Okay, next. We got a video for this one, guys, and the video kind of writes shit on the screen, so what I'll do is as I'm running that, I will read it for you so you know exactly what it says. It lays out some of the facts of the case by writing it out on the screen. It's from CNN. A Charlotte man named Keith Lamont Scott was shot and killed by police in Charlotte. And following the incident, there's been protests that turned violent. So let's watch a quick CNN video on it. Oh, fail. Hold on. Hold on. Troubleshooting, bitch. Who doesn't love a live show? Okay, here we go. Protests erupted in Charlotte after a police officer fatally shot a black man, Keith Lamont Scott. We're laying out some basic facts here. Police were looking to serve a warrant to someone else who they encountered, who police say was armed. Crowds gathered on Tuesday night near the apartment complex where the incident occurred. They chanted, "No justice, no peace," and carried signs that said, "Black Lives Matter." The clashes started near the complex and then continued onto the Interstate 85. The crowds blocked the highway and started a fire in the center of the road. Some also attacked police cars. Riot police used tear gas and formed a line to stop the crowds. At least 12 officers were injured, according to the police department. So that little clip there was actually from the first night. The riots have been going on for about 2 days now. There was more property damage last night. Somebody was also shot by another civilian and appears to be in critical condition. At first, you had AP and Reuters and a bunch of different outlets saying he actually died, but come to find out that wasn't the case. I don't know if it's the case now or not, but they said, no, critical condition. So there's a lot of confusion over that. Now, people originally said that this guy who was killed was reading a book when he was killed by the cops.
The cops say, no, he wasn't reading a book. He had a gun, and he was a threat. And they also say, well, the officer that killed him was black. So three cops were on the scene, and they have body camera footage, but it hasn't been released yet, at least as of right now as I'm talking to you guys. You might be watching this at a time when it has been released. I don't know. But as of now when I'm talking to you, it hasn't been released. And the officer who actually shot him does not have body camera footage because he was a plainclothes officer, but three other officers who were on the scene apparently have footage. Now, I don't know what the plan is on that. Are they going to release it? Are they not going to release it? I mean, in all seriousness, I feel like if they don't release it, they wouldn't release it because they feel like it was kind of damning to us. If they do release it, you know, it could go either way. They could release it because they feel like it exonerates them, or they could release it because they feel like, I don't know, just more transparency, and it's not like they've never gotten away with it before when you have it on tape and you have an unarmed black man being killed. But again, I don't want to – I genuinely don't know, and we genuinely don't know at this point in time, and anybody who says they do is lying, whether or not this guy was armed or not armed and whether or not he was a threat or he wasn't a threat. I really don't know. But speaking more broadly here for a second, because we're lacking facts and details on this case, key facts, but speaking more broadly, look, there are two points to make. Number one is – yes, the police killings need to stop. You reserve judgment on this one because we don't have enough facts, like I just said. But this happens so often, and we are so immensely numb to it. Like, people pointed that out when I did the segment the other day about Terrence Crutcher being killed. They're like, dude, you seem tired and just numb to it at this point, because it happens so often that police officers kill somebody who's unarmed. And it, like, I need people to understand this isn't a thing in the rest of the modern world. It just doesn't happen in the rest of the modern world. Maybe you have one every few years, if that, because some of the other places in the modern world, police don't even have guns. But with this kind of frequency, it just doesn't exist. They also don't they don't have the same kind of run-of-the-mill gun violence we have here, of course, because they have some more sane gun regulation. But this can't be the new normal. But it is, and that's the thing that's so maddening about this. Is it really has become the new normal where, you know, it's almost the case if you have a run-of-the-mill shooting and the person, it was like a personal dispute, that won't even make the news. One person murders another person with a gun and, it was a personal argument. That won't even make the news because people go, oh, only one person? Oh, it was a personal dispute? It wasn't a random act of violence? Oh, it wasn't linked to terrorism? Oh, okay, whatever. We got to not have a thick skin towards this stuff, because the only way we get change is to care about it and mobilize over it. Now, with that being said, look, the way in which people are responding to this is not acceptable. Now, there are people who've argued, and I've heard it a million times, they've argued against me, oh, you can't question the, you know, the tactics of the oppressed. Yeah, I can. Of course I can. So my problem with it is that it's a fucking contradiction. You can't say, I'm so oppressed and I'm such a victim, and now I will oppress and victimize others. So when you're destroying somebody's property who had nothing to do with it, that person is now a victim and you are the perpetrator. Period. You can't just view it in this didactic black and white way, quite literally, where, you know, I'm angry, therefore anything I do is okay. No. No. I mean, there was a video of somebody who was angry after this happened who said, all white people are devils, I don't like any of you, or something. That's not going to help. That's not going to make the situation better. That's not – and it's also just not true. You're all bad because they're – and a black guy killed him in this instance. But I get it. The argument is authority versus people – cops versus non-cops, people in authority, people that don't have authority, and they're too quick to pull the trigger. Agreed, but that the answer is not being a bigot yourself or hating everybody or burning down buildings that have nothing to do with it or lighting cars on fire. That doesn't make sense. And that's not going to achieve the goals you want to achieve. If anything, it feeds the narrative of demonization of you and makes it so people just dismiss whatever legitimate concerns you may have. So that's important to bring up. There was a video last night that really got under my skin of, there's a CNN reporter on the scene reporting, somebody tackles him. Somebody fucking knocks him down. You're not, that's not standing up for the oppressed. That's you're being a douche and you committed an assault. That's what that is. So, yes, you can question the tactics of the oppressed. The key point is, though, I do think there is oppression going on here. Some people would deny that there even is oppression. No, we have a problem. We have a problem with police killing too many unarmed people. And there are solutions to that. Now, but again, you also have to point out the irony that to far right-wingers, what happens? Colin Kaepernick takes a knee in peaceful protest. Oh, my God, I'm so offended. That's so outrageous. How dare you do that? Police kill an unarmed black person. Wait, what's going on here? Hold on now. So you're more offended by the peaceful protest than you are by the cops killing unarmed black people. Again, in this case, we don't know for sure, but Terrence Crutcher was unarmed, and there's a million other examples. Everybody knows that. So why is your outrage not at that? Why are you not offended at that, the dead bodies? And then also, they're more outraged at, you know, the violent response here. Oh, my goodness, why are you doing violent protest? Surely if you did peaceful protest, we would hear out your concerns and try to fix it. But they didn't. Colin Kaepernick did the peaceful protest, and they were like, fuck you. So peaceful protest, not okay. Violent protest, not okay to the right wing. So there is no protest that's okay because they don't think there's a problem because oftentimes they're not the cops are not killing them. It doesn't affect them directly. So yeah, I don't care. I don't care that you're oppressed. No, but you should. So I got anger at everybody to go around for this story if you can't tell. The violent response, the violent protest, the riots afterwards, it's not helpful. You're not moving towards your goal. You're moving away from your goal, and you're also doing the tactics that you claim to despise when the cops do it and when other people do it. So that's not cool. It's also not cool that we keep having dead bodies turn up on our hands and the cops keep doing the shooting. That's not cool. That's not okay. It's not like every single one of these instances was justified. That is just factually incorrect. You think Walter Scott was justified, where he was running away and a cop shot him in the back and murdered him and then planted something on him? Was that justified? Was Philando Castile justified? Officer, I'm going to reach for my – you want to see my license? I'm going to reach for my license. I want to let you know I have a licensed firearm on me as well. I'm going to reach for my license now. Reaches for it. Cop shoots him and just keeps the gun pointed at him and kills him. It doesn't even help him. Just keeps the gun pointed at him. Okay, that would appear to be a problem. Tamir Rice, 12 years old, pull up, not even 2 seconds go by, shooting, killing me at a toy gun, and he was 12 years old. And come to find out the cop who did it, he was fucking off his rocker. We learned that he had a mental breakdown recently, and he's psychologically not fit, so on and so forth. You know, Eric Garner choked out for no goddamn reason except maybe not selling loose cigarettes. So we have a problem, and that needs to be addressed. And let's also not pretend like that isn't the root here. So in other words, I condemn the violent response, but I understand that the violent response is coming out of these police killings. See, some people will try to make an argument like, no, they just want to do the violence and they're using any excuse they can. Well, no, why is it that every time there's a response, it is directly after a police killing of somebody? Like, if the police didn't kill that person, there wouldn't be the response. That should be obvious. But no, they try to pretend like they're just thugs and criminals and they want to do this anyway. Well, they have a weird way of showing it by only doing it after there's a police killing of somebody. So, you know, that's an important fact that should be brought up also. Again, condemn the violent response. I do, because violence is not productive and it's immoral. But I do understand that it's coming out of that. It's not like they would have done it either way, because they wouldn't have done it either way. You know, people try to call them thugs and criminals when we've seen white people riot repeatedly over sporting events. Nobody calls them thugs and criminals. The misguided kids, you know, acting out. So let's understand that aspect of it too. So yes, don't do the violent protest. Don't do riots. It's immoral. It's not going to help you reach any goals. And by the way, we should define our goals and be specific about it. I've argued, many other people have argued, body cameras on all police that are on all the time. And if they're not on, there should be severe punishments. Okay, so that we know what happens. And studies show cops are much less likely to do the violent action in the first place if they have the body cameras. So studies have shown that. I know that not if you catch it on tape, it's not a guarantee that they're going to, you know, be convicted. I get that. But it nips it in the bud. The numbers show that it's much less likely a cop will act out and abuse their authority if they know they're being recorded all the time. You got to end the drug war, which stops the police occupation of communities of color. You know, you can't have mass incarceration and lock people up for small amounts of weed. It's just stupid. And it breeds an us versus them tribalism aspect. You got to do de-escalation training so the cops aren't so quick to pull the trigger. You got to do civilian review boards, which holds police accountable way more than they are right now. You got to have special prosecutors when a cop does a crime. Right now, they know the prosecutors who are supposed to prosecute them, and they just don't do it. They throw the case because that's their buddy. So these are real concrete fixes. The violence and the riots do not help go towards that kind of a solution. So we should work towards those solutions in a constructive way. And yes, for peaceful protests, like what Colin Kaepernick is doing, that's what we do. We raise awareness about it, and we discuss the concrete solutions. That's what we should do about it. Okay? So the violent protests are wrong. The cops got to stop killing people, man. It just happens so frequently, and it's too much. So I got angry at everybody on this front here. But I think there are real solutions, and hopefully we can work towards them, because then maybe, just maybe, we can start saving some lives. Okay. Next. They did it again. The Senate advanced a bill to give Saudi Arabia $1.15 billion in weapons. Reuters reports here, the U.S. Senate cleared the way for a $1.15 billion sale of tanks and other military equipment to Saudi Arabia on Wednesday, defending a frequent partner in the Middle East recently subjected to harsh criticism in Congress. The Senate voted 71-27 to kill legislation that would have stopped the sale. The overwhelming vote stopped an effort led by Republican Senator Rand Paul and Democratic Senator Chris Murphy to block the deal over concerns, including Saudi Arabia's role in the 18-month-long war in Yemen and worries that it might fuel an ongoing regional arms race. Okay, so let's discuss this a little bit here. First of all, I give a tremendous amount of credit to Rand Paul for what he did. He went on MSNBC, he went on CNN, he went everywhere and started telling people, we got to stop arming Saudi Arabia, this is nuts. So Rand, and this is why I always say there's got to be a libertarian progressive alliance, because on so many issues we agree. So this is one area, Rand, I give you so much credit for this. All the 27 senators in total who voted against this, I love you guys. I love you guys. Thank you for doing. Al Franken was another one, and there were a bunch of others. Thank you. The 71, you are morally repugnant, vile cretins for what you did here. Because understand, this isn't really a debate. Like, among reasonable people, the debate's long over, son. We're talking about Saudi Arabia, who right now, they're bombing Yemen to smithereens. Over 50% of the dead are civilians, including women and children. They bombed a potato chip factory. They bombed schools for the blind. They bombed a mosque. They bombed Doctors Without Borders. In fact, the point is to bomb civilian areas. That's what they're trying to do, as they claim the opposite. They're also using cluster bombs, which are illegal under international law. They're also using white phosphorus, which is illegal under international law. So they're just flat out being terrorists. Furthermore, they're arming Al-Qaeda and supporting Al-Qaeda on the ground. Why? Because Al-Qaeda are the Sunni militias who are fighting the Shia Houthis who took over the government. Their enemy are the Shia Houthis. So they say, we need Sunni militias on the ground. Who are we going to arm? Well, Al-Qaeda's there. Arm them. So in other words, we give Saudi Arabia billions of dollars worth of weapons. Like I just told you, that's what this bill does. And then they turn around and take much of that and give it to Al-Qaeda. And I haven't even brought up Syria, how Saudi Arabia and Turkey, our top allies, are funneling arms to rebels who are jihadists. They are jihadists. So finally, you have 27 people who come out and say, bad idea. I don't like this very much. And oh, yeah, by the way, Saudi Arabia says all atheists are terrorists. You know, they're openly bigoted. Their whole system is bigoted. They're ISIS that made it. They behead people in the public square. They do it for the most insane reasons imaginable: sorcery, witchcraft, drug smuggling. They're gigantic human rights violators. So people stand up and fight against this, but still, nothing beats business as usual. Nothing beats the military-industrial complex. Nothing beats business as usual. You know, nothing beats imperialism and keeping the world order as it is. And that's why the 71 senators voted the way they did. And they're dead fucking wrong. So don't anybody come to me ever and say, oh, the United States, we care about humanitarianism, we care about altruism, we're fighting for the people, we're the world police. If we're the world police, we should be arresting Saudi Arabia, not arming them and making out with them like we are. All right, I'm going to give you one more, since this is the last show of the week. You guys can hang on here. I got the countdown in my ear, but we'll squeeze it in.
And I'll see everybody on Monday. All right. So, that's for everybody who's leaving. For everybody who's staying, one more. I have an amazingly grotesque story for you coming out of Colorado. Raw Story breaks it down for us. A church in Thornton, Colorado has come under fire after court documents revealed this week that it failed to report a pastor's sexual abuse to police because it believed the problem could be solved with biblical counseling. Pastor Robert Wyatt repeatedly had sexual intercourse with a 12-year-old girl at the Agape Bible Church in Thornton. What's even more disturbing is the fact that the court documents showed church officials knew about Wyatt's sexual abuse and did nothing. According to an arrest affidavit for Wyatt, both the head pastor and the 12-year-old girl's adoptive parents agreed that it would be best to not go to the police because they were concerned about what would happen to Wyatt. Instead, the affidavit claims the church and the parents agreed that biblical counseling they would receive through the church was significant to fixing the problem. The officer who interviewed the girl's adoptive father said the man made it clear his interest was in protecting the church and its reputation more than protecting his daughter. Goddamn. So what's the moral of the story here? It's very simple. Fundamentalist religion is a cult. It's just a big cult. That's what it is. So, you know, cults, everybody, oh my God, cults, what's the psychology of cults? Oh my God, it's crazy. People join this thing that they want to feel bigger than themselves, and then they sell, give away their individuality and their moral compass and, you know, give it to the cult, which is the higher purpose, and the cult could stand for the most monstrous things and do the most monstrous things, but they're not being logical about it anymore, so they just go along. Well, that is exactly what describes what happens here. Now, look, even as somebody who's an ardent atheist, it's not like all religious people are like they're in a cult, because so many people treat religion almost like a nationality. Like if you're born into a Christian family or a Muslim family or a Buddhist family or whatever, you're just like, yeah, I'm Christian. Yeah, I'm Muslim. Yeah, I'm Buddhist. So it's just a thing. And you go, okay, like I believe in God and maybe I go to, you know, religious services on the holidays or whatever. But they don't think much about it and they're very secular in their daily life. I wouldn't say those people are part of a cult. I do say fundamentalists are part of a cult because that's when logic is out the window. That's when you're literalist and you sometimes buy in to exactly what the holy books say, which is insane, and you get actions like this. You get actions like this. Oh, let me have, you know, let me watch a 12-year-old get raped and not give a fuck because the higher good is protecting the name of the church and protecting the pastor. If that's how you're thinking, your moral compass is so fucked up that you, what wouldn't you do to protect the pastor and to protect the church and its name? I mean, you could do some Nazi shit by this logic. If you're letting the 12-year-old get raped, how much further is it to, let's kill somebody? You know, some of the most heinous crimes. Yeah, whatever. Let's get away with it because that's more important. No, it's not more important. And this is why your moral compass is broken if you're a fundamentalist or if you're in a cult. And you got to snap out of it, man, because it's 2016. We need to care about the enlightenment and logic and reason. Okay. Out of time, guys. I'll see you Monday. Mwah. Much love. Peace.